So I'm starting this new series. I want to talk about life cycle events. I think it's an interesting series. I think we often attend and go through different life cycle events, and there are many halachos and minhagim that are involved in all of these life cycle events. And I think many of us are aware of a lot of them, but we don't necessarily understand all of them, or some of them we do, some of them we don't. So I figured we'll talk about this for the next several weeks. I just thought this week, if we're talking about life cycle events, we should talk a little bit about life and bringing life into the world. That's really where things start. Before the first life cycle, you have the mitzvah to bring life into this world, the mitzvah of Pru Revu. Now, just a word of warning, we're literally going to just scratch the surface of this mitzvah of Pru Revu. Probably each of the different topics that we're going to touch on can be an independent shiur in and of itself. So there's obviously a great deal to talk about. We're just going to scratch the surface, maybe get some general ideas. And then perhaps in other venues we can delve into some of the particulars in a little bit more depth. The source for this mitzvah, if you look at source number one, is the pasuk in Parshas Bereishis, in the very beginning of the Torah. Vayivarech Hosam Elokim, excuse me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses Adam and Chava Vayomer Lohem Elokim Peru Uruvu Umilu Es Haaretz V'chiv Shuha. Peru Uruvu, right? Obviously translated as we know as be fruitful and multiply. Be fruitful and multiply. Umilu Es Haaretz, fill up the land V'chiv Shuha, literally, and conquer the land. Uridu Bidgas Hayam Uva'of HaShamayim V'chol Chaya HaRomeses Al Haaretz. And this is essentially man's charge to take control of the world. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is charging us with. This is our goal, our purpose of existence in this world, or at least part of the purpose of existence, is to master the universe, to be masters over the universe. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, and that's what He charged us to do. There's a lot philosophically written about this pasuk, but in terms of, from our perspective, the mitzvah is the mitzvah of Peru Revu, to be fruitful and multiply. Now, obviously, it's very vague. We don't know exactly what that means, what's entailed. There's a fascinating Gemara. It appears in many places, but I just chose Pesachim. That's the first place in Shas that it appears. But the Gemara actually makes an incredible statement that the purpose of creation was for this mitzvah. Right? The Gemara Maseches Pesachim in source number two, Vahalo, lo nivra ha'olam ela l'piriya v'rivya. The world was created for the purpose of Peru Revu, for the purpose of bringing life into this world. Shenamar, as the pasuk says, Los, and this is a pasuk in Yeshaya that we'll come back to a little bit towards the end of this year, which is an important pasuk. Lo sohu v'ra'a, that I did not create it, tohu like in tohu v'avohu, like in the beginning of the Torah. I did not create it empty, for nothing. La sheves yitzara, I created it to be settled. The implication of the pasuk in Yeshayahu is that Hashem created the world, that it should be settled. That's why Hashem created this world, so that we should settle it, and that's the idea of Hashem creating us as human beings. We're supposed to populate this world, but just a very powerful line in the Gemara that the lo nivra ha'olam ela l'piriya v'rivya. The world was created for us to populate it, for us to bring children, to bring people into this world. The Sefer HaChinuch writes in source number 3, Mishar She Mitzvah Zu. What's the idea behind the mitzvah? And the Sefer HaChinuch is always a good address if you want to find out a little bit of the depth behind the mitzvos. And he writes, Kidei Sheyihiyah HaOlam Miyushav. The purpose is so that the world should be settled. We're supposed to bring life into this world so that the world should be settled. Shehashem Baruch Hu Chafetz B'Yeshuva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world to be settled. Kedichsiv quotes this pasuk. Lo sov v'ra l'ashev esitzara. V'hi mitzvah gedola shebesibasa miskayemes kol ha-mitzvos ba'olam. This is a great mitzvah, because when you fulfill this mitzvah, all the other mitzvos will be fulfilled as well. Right? If a person chooses not to have any children, right? You know, a person chooses, I'm not going to have any children, that's it, just me. I'm not going to have any children, I'm not going to bring any life into this world. So essentially what you're doing is you're deciding to end the line of mitzvos. You're a person who's an Oved Hashem, you're a person who's performing mitzvos, learning Torah, you're fulfilling God's will, and you're essentially deciding that the line ends here. That's it. Mitzvos are going to stop after me. Now, obviously, the other people in the world, other Jews in the world, But from my perspective, we're done. We're done here, God. We're done here. So essentially, that's what the Sefer HaChinuch is saying, that our responsibility is to ensure the continuity of our Masorah, the continuity of Yiddishkeit, the continuity of Torah and Mitzvos. We have to do our share. Ki li b'nei Adam nitnu v'lo l'malachi asharis. Right? Sefer HaChinuch says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to b'nei Adam. Hashem gave the Torah to people. Hashem didn't give the Torah to malachi asharis. Malachi asharis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates right and left. Right? There's plenty of malachi asharis to go around. Plenty of malachim. But they're not the ones who are fulfilling the Torah. Right? The human beings are fulfilling the Torah. And we are in the driver's seat in terms of bringing human life into this world. So that's what Sefer HaChinuch writes, the incredible importance of bringing life into this world. Now obviously you see from the context here that if the whole purpose of bringing life into the world is to ensure the continuity of Torah and Mitzvos, so obviously that doesn't mean that a person who, let's say, does not have children, cannot have children, is not fulfilling any purpose, because after all, here we have, the purpose is really for Torah and Mitzvos. So if you're living a life of being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, if you're living a life of dedication to Torah and Mitzvos, so honestly, whether you have children or you don't have children, you're still fulfilling your purpose in this world, and you're still obviously, you know, fulfilling your Ratzon Hashem. But the idea here is when a person decides, a person makes a decision that they're going to or not going to have children, that's what we're discussing. Obviously, you know, it's not always in our hands. When a person decides to have children, to not have children, so then they're violating this idea, this concept that the Sefer HaChinuch sets forth here. Okay, so that's a little bit philosophically of the idea behind the mitzvah of Pru Revu, that this is really the goal. Hashem wants a relationship, Hashem wants us to be following His Torah, to be following His mitzvahs. The only way for us to ensure that that happens is by ensuring the continuity of the Jewish people. By the way, this also, you know, this also sheds light on the travesty that is intermarriage. Now, when a person intermarries, certainly in the case, which is much worse, of a Jewish man marrying a Jewish woman, right? When that happens, so then essentially you're effectively doing the same thing. I mean, obviously you're bringing life into this world, but again, our focus from, in terms of the mitzvah of Pru Revu, is to ensure life that's going to be dedicated and committed to Hashem. So if you're bringing non-Jewish life into this world, so then you haven't fulfilled that purpose. That's not exactly what the purpose is. Now we'll talk about this. This gets a little bit interesting when we talk about Gerim, people who convert, and we'll touch on that a little bit in a couple of minutes. Okay, in terms of how a person fulfills Pru Revu, you know, what it takes to fulfill Pru Revu, so it is a machlokas in the Mishnah between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says if you have two boys, you fulfill Pru Revu. Beis Hillel says absolutely not. You need a boy and a girl. You need a boy and a girl. Why do you need a boy and a girl? So the Shulchan Aruch actually, obviously we paskin like Beis Hillel, we always follow Beis Hillel's opinion, and the Shulchan Aruch, if you look in source number 4, paskins this lahalacha, kevan sheyesh adam, le'adam, zachar unekeva, when a person has a boy and a girl, a male and a female, kiye mitzvahs piriyah v'rivyah, he's mekayim this mitzvah. Why? Explains the Prisha, who's one of the commentaries on the tour, quoting another sefer, the Kesonas Pasim, kevan sheyesh adam, zachar unekeva, in source number 5, he writes, the alfinon mibrias olam. We learn it out from the story of creation. Shenemar zachar unekeva bara'am. Yeah, bara'o. Some different psukim that describe the same thing. But essentially, we're learning this from God Himself. God brought male and female into this world. Now, you know, technically He had to, because in order to, you know, keep the human race going, He had to have a male and a female. But listen, He could do whatever He wants. He could work this out however He wanted to work it out. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought a male and a female into this world, and therefore, we know that we always model ourselves, our mitzvahs, after the Ribbono Shel Olam. So too we see that that's the mitzvah, to bring a male and a female into this world. If you have all boys, it's great, but you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Pru Revu. So, I mean, listen, obviously, with I'm just saying, with all of these conversations and all of these discussions, obviously a person can only do what's within their ability. You know, a person can have, 15 kids, and they can all be the same gender. So it's, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that you were not going to fulfill this mitzvah, Pru Revu. That's just, but you did your hishtadlus. You did your due diligence, you know. Now, where the due diligence ends is a good question, but that's for another time. Okay, that's the mitzvah of Pru Revu. A person is supposed to try to have a male and a female child, a boy and a girl, and that's how you fulfill this mitzvah. at what point does this mitzvah begin? Right, when does this person have a mitzvah? Now, normally we say a person, a boy, as soon as they reach the age of bar mitzvah, and a girl, as soon as they reach the age of bas mitzvah, are mechuyev and mitzvos. So do we say that a 12-year-old girl and a 13-year-old boy have a mitzvah pru revu? Right, do we say that? So the poskim assume not, right, which is, you know, which makes us more comfortable. But the poskim assume not that there is no mitzvah at that age. The poskim assume that the mitzvah is when a person turns 18. Okay, what's the source for this? So the source is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. We know in source number 6, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos teaches us, Hu haya Omer ben Chamesh Shanim Lemikra. This Mishnah lists a whole bunch of different age suggestions or requirements for different things. That a child should start learning Chumash when they're 5. We start learning Chumash even before that, sometimes nowadays. But probably around 5 we do it. Ben Eser the Mishnah. Right, that we certainly don't abide by. The Mishnah says you should begin learning Mishnayos at the age of 10. We certainly begin learning Mishnayos before that. Kids learn Mishnayos already 8 years old, 9 years old maybe. They're learning Mishnah. Ben Shlosh Esrei LeMitzvos, Ben Chamesh Esrei LeTalmud. And we certainly begin learning Gemara well before Chamesh Esrei, well before 15. We learn Gemara already from, in 5th grade, 6th grade, we begin learning Gemara already. So we don't follow this Mishnah. And I mean, just that this is an aside. This has nothing to do with Peru Revu, but just an interesting, interesting Mishnah. But I mean, nowadays we assume that these were suggestions based on the certain time. These are not halachic requirements that you have to start learning these topics or these subjects at these ages. These were suggestions as to the best way to go about it. And nowadays, the Gedolim feel that this is not necessarily the best way to go about things, and that's why nobody follows this Mishnah. Exactly, that's what I was coming to. So I shouldn't say nobody. There's a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael called Zilberman's. There's actually 2 branches now. There's one in the Old City, and I think there's one in Beit Shemesh or something.
I know there's one in the Old City.
There's one in the Old City, and there's one in Beit Shemesh. This school has a different educational philosophy than any other school on the planet. First of all, they have school 365 days a year, including Yom Kippur. Right? Every single day of the year, there is yeshiva. There's no breaks, there's no vacation, there's no anything like that. And they follow this Mishnah to the T. They don't begin learning Chumash until 5, they don't begin learning any Mishnah until 10, and they don't begin any Gemara until 15. But what they do, I don't know what the tuition is. I guarantee you it's less than whatever we have out here. But what they do is that since they have these blocks of time where they're working on Chumash, 5 years they're working on Chumash, and 5 years they're working on Mishnah, they master these things by the time they get to the next stage. So these kids, by the time they reach age 10, they know the entire Torah basically by heart. They know almost all the entire Torah by heart, because essentially from 5 to 10, they're only learning Chumash. And they're learning Chumash seriously. And as kids get older, they can accomplish more and more, and they basically know the whole Torah by heart, and they learn 365 days a year, so there's plenty of time for the curriculum. So they master an incredible amount of information. And the idea is that the goal of the Mishnah was to have kids master information. The more information kids are coming away with, then as their minds develop and as their minds mature, they'll be able to analyze and they'll be able to think in a different way. But when you have a little kid, little kids can't analyze, little kids can absorb. They can absorb a ton of information. Right? You have a little kid, a kid of 4 years old, 5 years old, can memorize benching. He might not understand the word he's saying, he's not going to understand anything, but he memorizes benching. I had my son, last year had a Rebbe, who's been teaching for decades, literally decades. I was actually once on a Long Island Railroad train, coming back from the city with some frum guy on the train, and I struck up a conversation with him, and I told him, we started talking, my son is in Darche, he's in Rabbi Mandel's class, and this was a guy, middle-aged guy, and he said, well, I was in Rabbi Mandel's class in first grade. So he's been teaching first grade, this literally, for decades, and he has this thing. He puts up pictures of Gedolim all over the classroom, and he has the kids starting from day one memorizing the names of the Gedolim, going through the whole list every day. They go through the entire list of the, and you can it's amazing to hear it. You hear these kids, and these are little first graders, and they're rattling off the names of like 50 Gedolim on the wall. 39 Malachos. I would imagine, myself included, we would be hard-pressed to remember forget the Hebrew, the English translate, you know, what just identify the 39 melachos. These kids after first grade, they memorized the 39 melachos, the Hebrew word for it in the Mishnah, and its English translation. Right? I don't know if my son knew what winnowing meant, but he knew that Zorah was winnowing. But it's incredible what a child can accomplish, you know, in terms of absorbing information. So that's the idea behind this mission. Okay, that was just an aside. Now, let's redirect back to Puruvu. So the Mishnah continues, Ben Shmona Esrei L'Chuppah. And we'll stop here. You know, the rest of the Mishnah is also interesting, but for another time. Ben Shmona Esrei L'Chuppah. So 18, that's when you're supposed to get married. So the poskim learned from here, from this Mishnah, that the Mishnah is saying that 18, that's the time when a person is supposed to get married, and the goal of marriage is children. Now, the goal of marriage is children. That's what we believe in Yiddishkeit. A person gets married, right? Obviously, there are multiple goals, multiple purposes of marriage, but a person gets married to build a family, to create a family. So that's why, Ben Shmona Esrei L'Chuppah, that's the time that a person is the mitzvah is upon them to get married. The Shulchan Aruch says, if you look at source number 7, very interesting, this is a fascinating Shulchan Aruch, especially in light of contemporary dating and marriage practices. But the Shulchan Aruch writes, Mitzvah al kol adam sheyisa isha ben yud ches. Right? And the Shulchan Aruch is writing from the perspective of a man who's reading the Shulchan Aruch, that you're 18 years old, time to get married. Right? Time to get married, 18 years old. V'hamakdim lisa ben yud gimel, mitzvah min amuvchar. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that if you get married from the time already that you're 13, that's even better. It's even better. You're not obligated, but it's even better if you get married from the time that you're 13. Again, keep in mind that when the Shulchan Aruch was written, things were a little bit different, even going back 100, 200 years. Things were very different, and people got married much younger. Even in some communities, you know, I teach Sephardi girls, and they all tell me that their grandparents, all their grandmothers, all got married 14. You know, like most of the Sephardi girls that I teach, their grandmothers got married very young. Things were different. Things were different in different countries, different ages. So this wasn't always so crazy. Obviously, from our perspective in our society, it sounds pretty wild. Aval kodem yod gimel lo yisa. Interestingly, it says before 13, you should not get married. The havik is nus. The poskim say it's based on different gemaras that already that's too young. You know, lower than under 13 is too young. Okay, ubeshum inyan lo yavor me esrim shana below isha. But you certainly, no matter what, you certainly should not pass by the age of 20 without getting married. Right? That's like the latest. Age 20 is the absolute latest. Okay, I totally violated this Shulchan Aruch. Based in Kofin also Lisa, right? And the Shulchan Aruch writes that based in would force a person to get married at 20. Again, we're assuming that the person is not getting married at 20 because they choose not to get married at 20. So based in forces you at that time. Kedei l'kai mitzvah period. You have a mitzvah. It's time to fulfill the mitzvah of Puruvu. You can't just ride your bike all day. Okay, miu imosek b'Torah. Okay, so then the Shulchan Aruch describes a person who's studying Torah, and then it's going to be hard for the person. Those of you who've learned Kiddushin, I'm sure some of these ideas are familiar. These all come from the Gemaras in Kiddushin about this topic. The Rama does write that Baruch Hashem nowadays we don't force, right? Hago, if you skip a line or two, Hago bizman hazeh nagu shelo lachuf al zeh. Right, Basin doesn't force anybody nowadays to get married at any particular age. And he writes that even if you have a person who did not fulfill Puruvu and they're marrying a woman who cannot have children, you know, we don't force anything the way that Beis Din used to force. We don't force these kind of things. So we don't force things, and we allow the zivugim, we allow the marriages to go as they go, assuming a person is not doing anything wrong. You're not marrying a person that you're prohibited. But otherwise, we don't force anybody. We let everybody go at their own pace. And essentially, obviously, nowadays, because we live in the society around us, we can't. Our norms are based on the society around us. So if we had, you know, if we would go and suggest that our kids should go and get married at 18, you know, it would be challenging because of the circles in which we live. It would be challenging. Now that being said, if you think about it, in Frum society, we are still a little bit different than everybody else, right? Because even in the Frum world, still kids already in their early 20s are probably already seriously considering marriage, whereas in the secular world, that's not happening until, you know, late 20s, 30s maybe, where they're not seriously considering marriage. So it is still a different ballgame, you know, in the Frum world and the secular world. But and obviously, if you go into the Hasidic world, where they focus more on the, you know, it's more like this Ben Shmona Esrei L'Chuppah, where people are getting, you know, the boys are getting married before 20 and the girls are certainly getting married by 17, 18. So then obviously it's different, but then, you know, in general they're less engaged with the society around them. Okay. So that's a little bit in terms of the age for Puruvu. There's a fascinating discussion, and again, this is a whole sugya, and we can give a whole shiur. You know, we could have a whole topic just based on this topic. But we'll just discuss it a little bit. Shulchan Aruch has a fascinating case. What happens if you have a person who is born not Jewish, and he gets married, has a family, boy, girl, whatever, has a family, and he decides, he sees the light. He decides that Judaism is the right way to go, and this is the truth, and this is what he wants, and he wants to convert to Judaism. So he converts to Judaism, and now he's learning all the 613 mitzvahs, and he comes to the mitzvah of Puruvu, and he says, wait a minute, you know, I learned in the context of my conversion, we know that there's a concept that a ger is kekatan shenola dami, right? A person who's a convert, it's like they're a newborn child. Right, they don't have any of the connections that they had previously, so maybe I'm not Mekayim Puruvu, right? And let's say the person is older, he can't have children anymore, or you know his wife can't have children, whatever the case might be. You know, so what does he do? He had children when he wasn't Jewish, but now he's Jewish, and did he fulfill the mitzvah Puruvu? Did he not fulfill the mitzvah Puruvu? So it's a fascinating comment in the Shulchan Aruch. And again, the Shulchan Aruch discusses one case, and we can talk about many cases. But let's focus on this one case just for tonight. Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 8, if you have a non-Jew who had children when he was not Jewish, and he converted, and the kids converted with him. So that's one case. Let's focus on that case for now. Obviously, if the kids didn't convert, it's a different discussion. But let's assume that the kids did convert. So the kids converted with him. Writes the Shulchan Aruch, Harei ze kiyem mitzvah zu. He was Mekayim the mitzvah. He was Mekayim the mitzvah of Puruvu. Okay? So it's interesting because the children, he had the children when he was not Jewish. Right? When he was not a non-Jew is not obligated to the mitzvah of Puruvu. That's not one of the Sheva mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So he had the children when he wasn't Jewish. Now he converts to Judaism. His kids convert also. And now that's it. He was Mekayim the mitzvah of Puruvu. How does that work? But we know that the kids and the father are not really connected from a halachic standpoint. Obviously, biologically, they're father and son, or father and daughter. But from a halachic perspective, they don't have the same halachos of parents and children the way that we know the halachos of parents and children. So how do we understand this? So it's very interesting. And the Ture Evan actually asks, who is the same author as the Shagas Aryeh, asks an interesting question. He quotes a Gemara. He's talking about a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah without getting too involved in the Gemara there, but he's talking about a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. And essentially, the Gemara says that if a person, let's say that a person consumed, let's say a person was not well. They were not well. They were a shota, right? Mentally not well. They were mentally not well. They were a shota. So we know a shota is pater from mitzvos, not obligated in mitzvos. If a person is not mentally well, so not obligated in mitzvos. And let's say a person in that state eats a kezias of matzah. He does a mitzvah, right? He eats a kezias of matzah on the night of the Seder. And then, you know, what happens eventually, let's say that night, the person somehow gets better. I know that sounds crazy that he's mentally not well and then all of a sudden he gets better, but let's just assume for a minute, theoretically, all of a sudden he's better, right? He's better. He's now a regular functioning person, totally mentally with it. So does he have to eat another kezias of matzah or not? The first, no, okay. I hear where you're going, but so the Gemara essentially is clear that he has to eat again. He has to eat again. Why? Not related to that question of mitzvah srichos kavana. Why? Because a shota is pater from mitzvahs. Mitzvah srichos kavana is a question that, assuming that I'm chayav in a mitzvah, do I have to have intention when I'm doing the mitzvah that I'm fulfilling a mitzvah or not? Right. But here it's even worse. Because here, he wasn't mechuyev. The shota is not obligated in mitzvos. So he fulfilled the mitzvah at a time that he wasn't obligated to do so. And now later, when he's well, now he's obligated to do the mitzvah. So the action that he did while when he wasn't well and he was pater from the mitzvah can't exempt him from fulfilling a mitzvah at the time that he's obligated. And this raises a lot of interesting questions about a katan who becomes a bar mitzvah, right? All these interesting type of questions. Let's say he does a mitzvah when he's still a katan, right? And then all of a sudden the question is raised about kriyashma. I mean, kriyashma might not be a good example, but let's assume that you can fulfill the mitzvah of kriyashma before tseis hakochavim, right? So if he davens an early mariv and he says kriyashma, assuming you could be yotze, I mean, we hold that you can't really be yotze, you have to repeat it, but let's just talk theoretics for a minute, right? He says kriyashma, and let's say, you know, you could be yotze kriyashma early, but he's not yet a bar mitzvah. And then nightfall hits, he becomes 13, he's a bar mitzvah. Does he have to now repeat kriyashma because he said it when he was a katan? So it's interesting questions, like that. So, but essentially, the it's clear from the Gemara that you're not yotze, you're chiyuv of matzah if you eat it when you're exempt. So the Turei Evan asks, if you look at source number 9, second to last line on the first side of the page, towards the end of the line, where he says, V'kashili, this is very difficult to me. V'hadarminim beperek vav diyavamos, hayalo banim begeyuso v'nisgayer, right, which is our case, a person, a non-Jew, had children when he was not Jewish, and then he became a Jew. Rabbi Yochanan Omer kiyem piri yavirivya. Rabbi Yochanan says, and that's how he paskin, that you fulfilled peru revu. You fulfill the mitzvah. The Aval gav de b'nei Noach in mitzuman al piri yavirivya. Kid de Omar turning the page b'sanhedrin. And even though b'nei Noach, right, non-Jews, are not obligated to the mitzvah peru revu, it's not one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. So how can you do this? Okay, so that's the question that he asks. And if you skip another couple lines, the second line on this page where he writes, he just fleshes out the question a bit more. Why do you fulfill the mitzvah of Puru Revu with the children that you had when you were not Jewish? At that time, when you were not Jewish, you were not obligated in the mitzvah of Puru Revu. So those kids that you had should not work for you to exempt your obligation, to fulfill your obligation after you're now a Jew and you're a Bar Chiyuva. Okay, so that's the question that he asks. So the Minchas Chinuch has a brilliant answer, and the Minchas Chinuch, who's a commentary on the Sefer HaChinuch, answers that he says the mitzvah of Pru Revu is a completely different mitzvah than other types of mitzvahs. Many other mitzvahs, you think about the mitzvah of shofar, you think about the mitzvah of lulav, regular mitzvahs. They're one-time actions. You do the mitzvah, and you fulfill it. You blow shofar, you fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. You take lulav, you fulfill the mitzvah of lulav. That's it. There's no extension of time, there's no expanse of time. It's a one-shot deal. I do the mitzvah, and I fulfill my mitzvah. But says the Minchas Chinuch, you see, from the fact that a convert can be yotze his obligation with the kids that he had when he was not Jewish, you see very clearly that Pru Revu is not a one-time mitzvah. It's not a one-shot deal. In fact, he writes that if you look at source number 10, the Shulchan Aruch has a tragic, but a very interesting, but tragic case. What happens if a person has children, and Rachmana Litzlan, the children die? Are you Yotze Peru Revu? Right? Again, tragedy aside, we're just focusing from a legal standpoint, a halachic standpoint. Right? So what happens? So writes the Shulchan Aruch, Nolu lo zachar nekeva, umesu vihinichu banim, if those kids had kids, then you're yotze peruvu, right? Meaning, if you had grandchildren, essentially with these children, so you had children and then you had grandchildren, not you, people, someone had children and they had grandchildren, and now nebuch rachmana litzlan, the children die, but since they have grandchildren from these children, so it's considered that they still fulfill the mitzvah peruvu. Again, thinking back to that the philosophical underpinnings of the mitzvah, that makes a lot of sense. Because the whole goal of Peru Revu is to ensure the continuity of dedication to Torah and mitzvahs. So we have that. But the implication clearly is, and it's clear in other places, that if a person, that if the kids die, and let's say they're younger, they didn't have children, and you don't have grandchildren from these kids, you're not Mekayim the mitzvah Peru Revu. But one second, you already were Mekayim the mitzvah Peru Revu. So it's taken away from you? So the Minchas Chinuch says it's very clear that the mitzvah is not just to birth children. The mitzvah is not to deliver children, to bring children into the world. The mitzvah is to have children. That's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to have children, right? Who will be dedicated to the service of Hashem. So if a person had children, and now, rachmana litzlan, they don't have those children anymore, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah anymore. Right? The mitzvah is gone. You may have fulfilled it at one point, but right now you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. Right?
So you're saying that if I had children...
Not you, someone else. Yeah?
Someone else had children.
Yeah.
And his children never got married.
Right.
So then I can have children, so that means he didn't fulfill the mitzvah.
No. If his children are still alive, he fulfilled the mitzvah.
Okay.
Yeah, if they decide not to get married, not to have children, that's their decision. I mean, your puruvu is not dependent on your grandchildren unless a person's children die. Right? If a person's children die, so then they're only mekayim the mitzvah if they have grandchildren.
So is puruvu like tzitzis? As long as I'm making tzitzis, I'm mekayim the mitzvah. As long as I have the kids.
Similar, right? It's an interesting comparison, right? But similar, right? It's in that sense, correct, right? But if I'm wearing the beggar with the dalet kanfos, I fulfill the mitzvah. If I take it off, I'm not fulfilling the mitzvah. Yeah.
So what if the whole thing is to be Torah Jews? What if they're not Torah?
What if they go off the derech, Rachmana Litzlan, right? So then what? So that's the type of thing where I don't think it's interesting. I didn't see any discussion about that. Somebody might discuss it.
The Rambam says if you have kids who are cheresheit v'kadno mamzer,
that's true. That's true.
So obviously, at one point, it stops.
Right. Right. Correct. Right. That's right here. Very good. Thank you. I forgot about that. Thank you. That's a very good point. Yeah. Right. Very good. Okay. So Shlomi's pointing out. Excellent. If you look at the end of source number 10. This is what Shlomi is pointing out, that the Rama says at the very end, the second to last line towards the end, Hagah, Haya haben mamzer o cheresh shote v'katan, ki ima mitzvah. Right? So a cheresh shote v'katan, let's leave mamzer aside for now, that's a little complicated. But a cheresh shote v'katan are not obligated in mitzvah. So cheresh is a person who's deaf and dumb. They can't, they're mute, they can't hear and they can't speak. And a katan obviously is meaning a katan. And the kid dies as a katan. Obviously, if he gets older, you know, that's fine. Katan is an interesting word here. Or a shotef, a person has a child who's a shotef, who's mentally not well, and therefore they can't, they're not obligated in mitzvos, so you still fulfill the mitzvah, puruvu. So you have to wiggle a little bit. You have to say that even though that's the philosophical idea behind it, but if you have a child who, let's say, is not obligated in it, then it's not necessarily dependent on that. But I think, now that I'm thinking about it, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I did see that one of the commentaries here, I don't have the Shulchan Aruch in front of me, I think one of the commentaries does say that maybe the reason why you fulfill is because they can have children who are mechuyev. And even if you have a cheresh for a child, that cheresh can get married and they can have a child who's a regular person who's mechuyev in mitzvos. Right. Or a shota can get married and have children. Again, I don't know genetically what the probabilities are, but theoretically they can have children who are mechuyev. So you can make the same argument. If you have children who rachmana litzlan go off the derech,
right,
they can still have children who can be chozer b'tshuva.
And we see that happens.
It happens all the time, right?
Themselves can be
correct. They can also be chozer b'tshuva, right?
So Gary, yeah. I think Gary's comparisons to other mitzvahs, like the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah, it's like you said, Achilas Matzah is not just the Maisa Achilas. It's the
Ma'aseh
that's combined with a specific time.
Correct. Right.
When it comes to Geirus, you say that they're not related, is not so written in stone.
Okay.
For instance, if you have a brother or sister of Agayim,
right,
who convert, they can't marry each other.
Right, okay.
And if you say they're not related,
so why can't they marry each other?
Why can't they marry each other, right? It's
right.
Still
okay.
The,
right.
Yeah. Gemara,
so it's very right. So it's very interesting. So basically, so what the Minchas Chinuch says, coming back to the Minchas Chinuch, what he explains and he answers the Tzurei Evans question is that he says essentially this mitzvah is a different type of mitzvah, and it's a mitzvah that to have children, which extends over a period of time. But he says essentially when this person converts, and again, let's assume for a minute that the kids also convert. So, but that, without getting into that technicality, and I know it might be important. But essentially he's saying that this person does have children. This person does have children. And like Shlomi is saying, that even though halachically we say, kikatan shenolo dami, that it's like you're like a newborn and you have no familial connections, but there are certainly biological, there's a connection. Okay, and we know that when it comes to, even though when it comes to Jews, right, we always go, when it comes to Jews, the Jewish lineage always follows the mother.
The mother, right?
Always follows the mother. When it comes to non-Jews, whatever lineage is important for discussions with non-Jews always goes by the father. Always goes by the father. So essentially what he says is that once the person converts, he has children, so he is Mekayim the mitzvah of Peruvu. He has children, right? He has children from when he was not Jewish. And it's not meaning, the Ture Yevon's case is when you did the action when you were putter, and now I ate the matzo when I was putter, and now all of a sudden I'm chayav, so can that action that I did when I was putter, can that action transfer? And the Gemara says it cannot. It cannot transfer. But here he says this is not the case. He says that any action that you did, the relations, the conception that caused this child, that was what we call a hechsher mitzvah. That's just a means to bring the child into the world. That's not the mitzvah itself. The mitzvah is to have children. So having children, he has. It's true that the relations happened, you know, the children were born when he was not Jewish. But who cares? That doesn't matter. It's a very interesting perspective that this is a completely different type of mitzvah than other mitzvahs. Yeah.
So in the case where somebody has children and then they pass away.
Okay.
So that person now is really considered an ones, right? Because it's not...
like onus rachmona patri, you should say.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that depends if he can...
But if he can have more children... I mean, if he can't have more children, he can't. So then you're right, yeah. I mean, you're an onus. I mean, listen, if a person has all boys and they don't have any girls, they're also onus. You know, what are you going to do? You try to have, you can't, you know, we don't genetically, change the gender of the child. You know, you're right. Onus rachman apatri. So Hashem is not going to hold you responsible if you tried your best and you couldn't do anything about it. Right. But if a person can have more children, what we're saying here is that a person, he would have to have more children in order to fulfill the mitzvah, if he can. Right? Okay. There's a fascinating case. This kind of blew my mind. And again, this could be like a whole shiur. And especially nowadays, with modern technology, this could be a whole shiur. The case in the halacha sounds crazy. And you'll see in a minute that the Mishnah, I'll explain. There's a case in the Gemara, it sounds wild, but there's a case in the Gemara of a woman becoming pregnant by taking a bath.
Right.
Okay? So there's obviously there's some sperm in the bath. She takes a bath and somehow it enters her body and becomes pregnant. Nisabra
Be'ambati. That's the case
with a katana. A katana?
No, a tana, one of the
tanaim. Oh, yes, yeah. So this case comes up in the Gemara in several places. In the context of a halachic discussion. Now, before you reach any conclusions about Tanoim and Amoraim and their Gemara discussions, the Mishnah Lamelech says clearly, he has a whole long discussion about this, and he says that this is not an actual possibility. This is not something that can actually happen, but the Gemara sometimes discusses wild cases that are physically and scientifically impossible just to bring out a halachic point, a halachic truth. There's other wild cases... plenty of other wild cases in the Gemara also. There's one famous one I'm thinking of right now, which we don't have to discuss. But there's some wild cases in the Gemara that are not possible. They can't happen. But we want to know, theoretically, conceptually, what would be the halacha? So there's a case of a woman who gets pregnant from an ambati, right? She gets pregnant after taking a bath. So the Chelkas Mechokik, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, writes, Yesh lihi stapik, in source number 11, he says, I'm in doubt, if you have a woman who got pregnant after taking a bath, did the father of the child, right, the sperm came from someone, did the father of the child, was he Mekayim Pururavu? He had a child with this woman. Was he Mekayim Pururavu? Okay, now there was no bia, there was no relations, it certainly wasn't in the conventional way. But was he Mekayim Pururavu? Now, I was thinking about this.
It's not so far-fetched.
It's nowadays, it's not so far-fetched at all.
Right.
IVF, right? There's a lot of different different things that artificial insemination. You have cases, right? You have cases where this is actually what we call maisim b'chol yom. These things happen all the time, right? These things happen all the time nowadays. Maybe not in a bathtub, right? But in a scientific bathtub or some sort of scientific method where you have a father's sperm being injected into the woman and she conceives based, you know, because of that. And the question is that a fulfillment of the mitzvah, Puravu? There's no conclusion. This is an interesting discussion. I'm just saying some food for thought. Well, let's say you know who it is.
So if you know it's the father, then you don't need a mice and be it, you need a kayam pure Yerubi. It's not called in the Maisa. It's
okay. So the Chalkas Mechogik is not sure. He's talking about, but you know who the father is. If you don't know who the father is, so of course you don't know. You know, but he's talking about if you know who the father is, and if you read the Mikri Beno L'chol Davar, right? Is this child called the son of this father for all halachos? Is he called his son for all halachos? It's a very interesting question. Again, you know, maybe we'll talk about this in an extended context. I just wanted to raise it. It's an interesting thing to think about.
So you could claim a mitzvah. Knowing that you own the
well, that's for sure true.
Yeah.
That's for sure true. The Gemara says that let's say that you drop a coin and an ani picks it up, right? You know, you could be mekayim the mitzvah of tzedakah. You didn't realize you were. You could be mekayim the mitzvah without knowing that you did it. You still get points, right? Okay, so that's mitzvah shrichos kavana. That's right. There's a famous story that I think Pesach Kron tells this story. That if I'm not mistaken, I think it was with a kollel in Dallas or a shul in Dallas, and all of a sudden this shul of this kollel gets a gigantic check from like a total random stranger. So you know, a guy calls this, the Rosh Kollel or whatever, calls up this guy, some not from Jew in Dallas. He calls him up and he's, you know, what's going on? You know, thank you very much for your generosity, but I'm just curious, you know, what your connection is. So he says that he went to visit Israel. And he was davening at the kotel. He went to pray at the kotel, and he sees like a chassid, you know, davening with such fervor and devotion and kavana, and he just was totally wowed by the prayers of this chassid. And he decides that, you know, he's going to go back to Dallas and find people that look like this, and he's going to give money to their prayer house, because if this guy prays like this, then they must be doing something right. So then he came back and gave money to the shul. So I remember Rabbi Kron pointing out, he's like, La'asi lava, this chassid is going to go up to Shamayim, you know, and they're going to tell him, like, you know, look at all that you accomplished in Dallas. And the chassid is going to look at the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, Dallas? Whoever went to Dallas? What's Dallas? Where's Dallas? But he didn't even know. But his davening inspired someone to give tzedakah in Dallas, Texas, and look what this shul accomplished, you know, just by the davening of this person. Okay, but you can't fulfill a mitzvah without knowing. Okay, just to conclude, very, very quickly, after a person fulfills the mitzvah of Pru Revu, the Shulchan Aruch is very clear that Afa Pi Shekiyem, Piriya Verivya, Asur Lo Lamod Below Ishan. There's a couple different things at play here. Number one, the Shulchan Aruch writes that a person should not remain unmarried. So let's say a person is married, has children, and Rachman Litzlan, a person's, let's say, again, from the man's perspective, a person's wife dies or something like that. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Asur Lo Lamod Below Isha, a person should not remain unmarried. A person should get remarried. A person should get remarried. Why? So we know it's based on the Pasuk, the Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis, Lo Tov Heyos HaAdam Levado. Kodesh Baruch Hu says it's not a good thing for a person to be alone. And therefore, there is a certain companionship and camaraderie, and, you know, besides for the other benefits of marriage. And therefore, a person should continue to get married, even if he was Mekayim already, Pru Revu. He already fulfilled Pru Revu. But there's another idea of Lo Tov Yos Adam Levado, which the Beis Shmuel writes is an Asmachta, it's a Derabbanan. We're just running a little short of time, so maybe we'll take questions at the end. So that's one point. Another point is also, there's two different psukim. One pasuk, the Braisa writes in Maseches Yevamos, in source number 14, that even if a person... If you look quickly at the Braisa, Rabbi Yeshua says that Nasa Adam Yisho B'Yalduso Yisa Yisho B'Ziknuso. Even if a person was married when they were young, and now they're no longer married, they're divorced, they're widowed, whatever the case might be, so you should get remarried. Hayu Lo Bani B'Yalduso Yu Lo Bani B'Ziknuso. A person had children when they were younger, should have children when they're older as well. Shenei Mars. The pasuk says, and this is the pasuk in Koheles, Baboker Zera'es Zarecha Ula'erev Al Tanach Yadecha. You sow your seeds in the morning, but at night, don't just rest at night. You should continue at night as well, meaning you should be working constantly. Why? Because you don't know how things are going to turn out. You don't know which kids are going to make it, which kids are going to last, which kids are going to be successful. You don't know. So there is a mitzvah of Baboker Zera'es Zarecha L'Erev Al Tanach Yadecha, that just because a person had a boy and a girl, you shouldn't say, oh, okay, I had a boy and a girl, I fulfilled Pru Revu, that's it, you know, I'm closing up shop. Right, there's also a mitzvah to continue having children, and again, going back to those philosophical underpinnings, it makes a lot of sense. There's a mitzvah to continue populating the world with people who are going to be Oved Hashem, and there's also another, if you look back to the first source, it says also, the pasuk of Lo Sovara Lasheves Yitzara, that also HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world to be populated. So it's part of the, not just the mitzvah, there's the technical mitzvah peruvu, but there's also the hashkafa, the general perspective of having children. Now obviously, this is not a shiur on family planning and the birth control and things like that. And you know, you have there's complex things that go into that, and obviously health concerns and things like that. But at the same time, this is the intention. This is why in some communities they don't believe in birth control based on these ideas, and they just continue having children until they can't anymore. So in our communities, we do believe in. We do believe in factors controlling family planning. Again, you know what exactly those factors are is a little bit complicated, but factors controlling it. But it's important to keep in mind the hashkaf and the philosophy behind it. That the goal of the our goal as married people is to try to bring life into this world, and we have to fulfill the mitzvah puravu. But we also have this hashkafa of la sheves yitzara and baboker zazarecho l'erev al tanach yadecha. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. Thank you very much. Mitzvah Hashem, next week we'll pick up. A Kaddish? No. Oh, a question. Yeah, we'll take it after that in case people want to leave. I just don't want to keep everybody, but I'll be happy to take questions. Okay, so I didn't get to that. So it is clear, I know Joe mentioned that earlier. It is clear, it seems that the mitzvah is only on men. It is only on men. Why not women is a good question, but it seems that the mitzvah, the technical mitzvah peruvu, is only upon the man. Probably because, you know, the woman is the passive partner in the relationship that's going to bring children into the world. So maybe that's why. You know, the mitzvah is not necessarily upon her, the obligation. You know, of course, the philosophy is you know, applies to men and women equally. But the technical mitzvah is not.
Is that the only reason?
I'm not sure.
What?